What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Felix Hartman Show. Today's our very first solo episode because I want to talk about the topic that's been on everybody's mind this week, capturing every headline out there, and that is Terra, Luna, and UST. Terra Luna, for those that don't know, is both a layer one blockchain and also a stablecoin that has been growing over the last 24 months and taken the world by storm, only to this week finally collapse fully, destructing about $40 billion in value. We saw Luna lose about $25 billion in market cap in as little as 2 days, and we saw UST, the stablecoin, lose about $14 billion in market cap in as little as 2 days. Now, a lot of people will look at this and wonder, first of all, how could this even happen in the first place? And could this happen to other digital assets? So my goal in today's podcast is really to do a couple things. First, I'll start highlighting a little bit of my relationship with Luna, because I've been investing into Luna since 2020 when it was a fledgling project at 20 cents. And I've also walked away from Luna late of 2021 because I started seeing the writing on the wall that this project was not sustainable after all. Secondly, we'll talk about how Luna itself works, and because it's really important to understand the mechanism behind Luna, to both be aware why it failed and also what projects might have similar architecture to it. Then I would like to highlight the actual smoking gun. You know, what made me and Hartman Capital really distance ourselves from the Terra ecosystem, being one of the bigger backers in 2020 and 2021, because there was many features that we no longer aligned with and that made us sell our entire position, and also made me go public on seminars and also on live streams where I publicly disavowed, so to say, the principles on which Terra was acting. Finally, I want to talk about the collapse, because the collapse itself had so many nuances, from the LFG reserves and, you know, the potential of market makers trying to salvage the peg. And finally, we'll talk about the potential implications of this incident, because as many are looking across the crypto markets, you know, we were seeing countless assets. Nearly every single crypto asset has been losing more than half its value. Some of it, of course, is attributable to the macro backdrop that's currently happening with the rising interest rates. But it surely is only further, you know, accentuated by the recent incident with Terra, because again, many people looking in from the outside are concerned that could this be a symptom beyond just Terra? And furthermore, of course, what other players could this affect? Is there any kind of contagion? So let's dive right in. Right. First of all, you know, why am I worth listening to on this subject? Look, in summer of 2020, I first discovered Terra. Back then, I fell in love with it because I am a fundamental investor. And as a fundamental investor, I look for value creation first. And at the time, Terra was pretty unique because it had an algorithmic stablecoin, the first of its kind that actually was constructed in a way that was sustainable. Why do I say that? Because at the time, summer 2020, we had a couple other algorithmic stablecoins, like, for example, Ampleforth. Ampleforth was merely an algorithmic stablecoin where if it goes above a dollar, they mint more. If it goes below a dollar, they burn a few, right? In order to make the supply and demand always make it be worth about the same purchasing power. Now, Luna was different because Luna was one of the only stablecoins that had actual usage and utility. Because at the time, Luna didn't even primarily use UST. Back then in 2020, Luna had KRT, which was an algorithmic version of the Korean won. And what I loved about it at the time was that they had over 1.5 million users, actual users utilizing KRT powered by Luna on the Chai app, which had, you know, tremendous traction at the time. And the amazing thing about it is, again, the thing that drew me as a fundamental investor was that they're collecting a ton of network fees, a ton of transaction fees that made Luna actually a value growing token, because all these fees they collected were being paid out to Luna stakers. At the time, I believe the PE ratio, when I first discovered it, was a PE ratio of 4. That's how much it was used. That's how much the imbalance between its income and its market cap was. So, you know, I first parted ways with Luna at around a dollar. That was a big you know, remorse, so to say, because I would then see it go from $1 to $20 in the January, February of 2021. Now, at the time, you know, I was kind of upset that like I let it go so soon, but I knew that it's a great project, a quality project that I was eager to get back. And in May of 2021, we actually saw exactly what happened today, this week, happen for the first time. In May of 2021, for those that don't remember, May of 2021 was a big crash in crypto. Most crypto assets lost 50, 60, 70%. The DeFi space lost about 80% of its value. And to make things worse, it was also some of the biggest liquidation days in crypto's history. If I don't incorrectly remember, either $9 or $19 billion got liquidated in a single day in May of 2021. Now, as a result, because of this market stress, we saw UST depeg for the first time. And the difference is, though, that back then, the depeg was fairly short-lived and small. You know, at some point, you know, UST might have been trading at 98 cents, and that concerned people, right? But within 2 or 3 days, UST regained peg. Now, in the process of losing its peg, though, Luna dropped from the 20-some dollars down to $4. The value-driven investor in me looked at it and said, hey, you know what? The reason why Luna crashed was because it went off peg. And the peg had been fully reestablished. It was back to $1. It's been trading at $1 for a couple of days. It is now safe to re-enter Luna. And so at the time, we built a big position in Luna at $4. In fact, if you look at the charts and you see a big green candle, that was us. And so we had this Luna position, and I continue to be a fan because what ended up happening is that Luna really grew beyond being a stablecoin. And it wasn't just a stablecoin protocol, but it became a popular layer one. It attracted big projects like Mirror Protocol that does synthetic assets. It had Anchor, which was a yield protocol. It had many, many more, such as Ellis, Andromeda, Angel, Playbo, many, many more projects that were slated to be released in Q3, Q4 of that year. So it had a promising play as both a stablecoin and a layer one. Ergo, you know, it became one of our biggest positions of 2021. And we kept riding it. We kept riding it from $4 all the way to $85, at which point we parted ways with the position. And throughout this time, you know, we not only were we early backers, you know, I've been talking with Doe occasionally, digitally, and also we've met in person in New York at Tifa Alpha. So I've met Matt from Anchor. You know, overall, I would say I don't see any improper fraudulent behavior on any of their parts. But what I would ascribe it to is that they likely got too ambitious and they got likely too over their head. I think overall they're decent guys, and that really ideally meant well, but I think they were building in an approach that worked in a bull market, but the moment the market turned even slightly bearish, the mechanisms on which Terra was built just simply couldn't hold up anymore. And that's how we slowly get to the smoking gun. Actually, before that, let's quickly talk about how Luna works, right? So before we get to the smoking gun, let's talk about how Luna works, because ultimately, in order to understand the collapse, it's important to understand the mechanisms behind it. So the system is pretty simple. In order to create a new stablecoin, for example, one token of UST, right, which is supposed to be worth $1, right, you have to burn $1 worth of Luna, and it will give you $1 worth of stablecoin. Okay? Now, what does it mean? That means that, and this is the logic behind the whole ecosystem and why it was such a great value trade, is that the more demand there is for UST, the stablecoin, right, the more stablecoins you need. Ergo, if we can't make this economy work with 2 billion UST and we need 4 billion, that means we gotta sell 2 billion worth. We gotta burn 2 billion worth of Luna. So what you saw happening throughout 2021 is that Luna, which started with 1 billion Luna tokens, burned roughly one quarter, about 250 million Luna tokens, one quarter of its supply gone in a single year. And so the vision behind Lunov was that if all these applications that had real-world users like Anchor, like Mirror, Angel was a protocol that works with charities, Alice is a protocol that has a debit card feature, and Playable is a fantasy sports protocol. There's many, many tools and platforms that were supposed to be built on Terra that bring real-world users, real-world demand, and create these sinks for UST. So Luna would be able to sustain it, right? That these tokens were actually being used. Now, the problem is that this mechanism goes both ways. You burn Luna to mint UST. But what happens if those UST holders want to get out? If those UST holders want to get out, they burn UST and get $1 worth of Luna. And now if that person tried to cash out, like for example, actually get it to USDC, their bank and so forth, they have to now sell Luna in order to capture that money. Now, what happens if all of a sudden there's billions of Luna being minted and heading for the exit? The price of Luna crashes. Now, if let's to keep numbers simple, you know, if Luna, let's say, is trading at a dollar, right? And somebody cashes out one UST, they get one Luna. They now sell it. Let's say the price of Luna goes down to 90 cents. The next guy who burns UST, how much does he get? He's minting about 1.1 Luna, right? He's getting more now because it's supposed to be worth one US dollar. And now if this guy sells, even more Luna hits the books. So what ends up happening with this mechanism is that this flywheel that makes the price go up like crazy in a bull market can absolutely demolish it on the way down. So now that we understand the mechanism behind it, right? And the logic was that we create so much demand for UST, so much token sink for UST, the price of Luna could only go up. And my belief is, and this can be judged, but this is also how much of Silicon Valley works. Silicon Valley for years has operated on an idea of fake it till you make it. And Do is a incredible salesman. He's an incredible marketer. And I think he's also a cunning businessman, but he overestimated his strength, to put it softly. Because the idea was, and this is where he was on the right path, by creating these flywheel effects, he was able to get the price of Luna up to a market cap of roughly $100 billion. He was then able to sell a large amount of Luna to create a backstop with the LFG reserves, for example. He created more in dollar terms of a backstop than Luna was worth when I first got involved. Without the flywheel, he would have never had that in the first place. So where did it all go wrong? Let's talk about the smoking gun. The reason we distanced ourselves from Luna was particularly in November of 2021. In November of 2021, UST had a supply of about 2 billion tokens. By the end of April, we were at 18 billion tokens. The problem with that is that the Luna Foundation and Do started aggressively growing the UST supply. And that would have been fine. But the question is, who was using UST? And where did all that UST end up? About 75% of all the UST in circulation at the time before the crash, 18 billion UST existed. About 14 billion of those set on Anchor Protocol. Now you might be wondering, what is Anchor Protocol, in case you're not deep in the crypto space? Anchor Protocol was/is a lending protocol, a savings bank if you want, that pays you 20% interest. Now, most people, there's two types of people here. There's one type of people that says, that's amazing. Let me ape in. Here's my money. And then there's the other type of people that ask, where's that coming from? And so for a long time, you know, it was funded by token incentives, money that Anchor still had. At some point, Anchor ran out of money. So what did TFL and Do? They said, hey, no problem. I mean, we got, you know, Luna's worth $100 billion. Let's just sell a billion of that, let's say, and replenish the Anchor reserves. And again, there's two types of people. One type of person says, oh my God, $1 billion. That's amazing. That will last forever. And then there's a person asks, well, how long will it actually last? And I started running the numbers, and what we realized is that Anchor, because it had $14 billion milking that 20% yield. In fact, you had entire funds. Like, for example, Arrington Capital launched an entire anchor yield fund with $100 million. So you had like institutions and even neobanks, right? Traditional neobanks. You had YC Combinator companies start putting their money into anchor. It became this black hole of liquidity. And so here's the real number. Every single day, anchor was burning about $4 million a day. The math came out that on an average month, Anchor was burning about $120 to $150 million. And I don't care how, you know, ambitious your plans are, that is not a burn that is sustainable. In fact, at the peaks of the WeWork days, when it was, you know, fueled by Masayoshi Son's SoftBank, WeWork was burning $2.5 million a day, and it made headlines. It was the end of everything. Now, Anchor, quietly in the background, is burning $4 million a day. And what is it getting for it? You're not getting desks. You're not getting real estate. You're not getting, you know, global market share in co-working. What you got is temporary users milking you for yields. And so, again, to play devil's advocate, you know, as a founder, you know, Do likely saw this is the way to get Luna to a very high market cap. This is the way to get UST in the hands of as many people as possible, and then we create other use cases for it. And in fact, you know, Anchor did spawn off a lot of use cases. But the problem is that this dependency created a huge Achilles heel for Luna. So now you have, now with Anchor burning $150 million a month, right? We were now getting close in April, only about $100 million were left in the Anchor yield reserve, which means that in less than a month from April, Anchor was once again going to run out of money. And then two things happened. First of all, investors like I knew that Luna would be forced to sell more Luna tokens in order to replenish that reserve. But they slowly became aware because as we started entering a bear market, Luna also sold off. It no longer was worth $100, it suddenly was worth $70. So the price had already declined. And two problems started arising. One, Anchor realized it can't keep it up. And so for the first time since starting, they lowered the yields. They lowered the yields from 20% down to 18%. And many people saw the writing on the wall and said, well, if they're starting to lower it now, they're gonna keep lowering it, let me just take my money out now. And so we saw the first wave of exits start happening. Secondly, when we first got involved in Luna, you know, the ratio of Luna market cap to UST market cap was perhaps a factor of 50x. So for every dollar in Luna, for every dollar in UST, there was about $50 in Luna, something along those lines. By the time we got out, there was only about $2 in Luna for every dollar in UST, which means, and this is where the collapse, now we're getting really to the collapse. So you had step one, Anchor lowered the yields. The first people start getting out. In the background, you had the Fed raise interest rates. Markets drop, right? Even Luna starts coming down a lot. And then, and this is where I want to leave speculation at the side. There's a lot of people out there that say, oh, Citadel got involved and this happened and that happened. In my eyes, that is all irrelevant. Because if a system is that easy to be broken, it is not the assailant's fault. It is the project's fault. The project, if the project is meant to be used by millions of people around the world to be trusted with a stablecoin, it needs to be designed in a way where nobody can break it. Because guess what? There's people that wanted to break Bitcoin, and they might want to, but they weren't able to because it was designed well. Same thing goes with Ethereum. Even though Ethereum had a DAO hack back in the day, for, you know, more than half a decade, Ethereum has been strong. There's many people that want to see Ethereum fail, but they have not been able to pull it off. So now you have this situation where UST is trying to exit the system because the yields are falling. You have the price of Luna starting to crash. And now as these people are trying to get it out, all of a sudden, because there was a limit on how much USD can be burned for Luna any given day. And as a result, you started having people trade their UST for other tokens. What happens now? Well, if there's too many of us selling UST for USDC, for example, well, what does a sell do? It takes away a bid. And if we take it away enough bids, all of a sudden, it's not trading at a dollar worth of USDC, it's trading at 99 cents. And then people see 99 cents, usually initially you have some arbitragers. They say, hey, I can buy a dollar worth for 99 cents. Let me do it. Push back. And that's where the war really started erupting. You've got the arbitragers and the Luna community that believe UST will come back to peg. And then you have a mix of people realizing that this system is unsafe and trying to exit their money. And then throw in perhaps also some short sellers that say, hey, this is a fragile system. There's an opportunity here to take it down. And I'm sure there was people involved in that segment, but I think pointing fingers at Citadel out of the blue because it was posed on Reddit is a waste of time. So what ended up happening is that it went to 99 cents, 98 cents. And I think this is where chaos could have been avoided if it was managed better, because Doe is somebody who's been tweeting perhaps 50 times a day. And, you know, he's ambitious, but he's got an ego. He's been known to, you know, make fun of competitors, make boisterous statements about, for example, you know, that DAI, the stablecoin of Maker, will die at his hand, and all these kind of like rather juvenile remarks. Yet all of a sudden, when his project was put in question, he went silent. Nobody would hear from him for hours and hours. He said, we'll fix it, we'll be right back. Hours passed and people would look on as UST go from 98 cents to 97 cents. At that point, we started, you know, alerting our communities, whether it's Crypto Academy, our portfolio founders, anybody within our reach, that, hey, there are weaknesses in the system. It would be smart for you to exit your UST position. And again, we did this privately. I did not post this on Instagram or Twitter or anything. My intention is not to cause a bank run, but I certainly want to make sure that the people I'm accountable for, such as, for example, my portfolio founders, are taken care of, that their runway is not getting burned to the ground because of poor management on the case of TFL. So UST started, you know, collapsing lower. I believe it ended that day at like 85 cents. And finally, you know, sometime at night or in the afternoon, Doe came back with, again, some boisterous statements, and he sent the cavalry in, right? He had some money on the sidelines from the LFG reserves, and he pumped the price of UST back up to a dollar. And he said, like, you idiots, essentially, you know, don't even dare like bet against UST and Luna and so forth. Lots of comments like that. And things looked fine for now. And in fact, you know, many leaders in the crypto space said like, oh, if you want to take down Doe, you better go for a kill shot, right? And things didn't last. Within 24 hours, we started seeing the peg fall again. And with the peg falling again, people now started getting really concerned, saying, hey, last time around, we had one depegging, it came back to peg and things were fine. This time it went lower. We dropped to the 70 cents and people started getting fear. People started realizing, hey, maybe it is worth taking my chances and saving 70 cents of a dollar versus losing everything. And so people started heading more out the door. And this is when things started getting ugly because one, the Terra network started having network issues. People weren't able to withdraw from Anchor, only further exacerbating the tension that was going on. And it kept going further where all of a sudden market makers were dropping out one by one. You see, when it was at 98 cents, a market maker loves to take that trade because it's an easy ARB. You're making almost a guaranteed profit because stablecoins go slightly off peg all the time, but they rarely go off peg a lot. So by the time, you know, we hit 80 cents, 70 cents, nobody wanted, like few people want to touch it. The few that want to touch it were likely the ones, for example, like Chump and others that had already vested interest in Terra and Luna, because it wasn't long ago, I believe, that firms like Three Arrows, Jump, and I believe Alameda made big investments into Luna as recent as perhaps March. So there was a lot of money on the line. There were several major funds with billions, with a B, in exposure to Terra. So this was a very much a darling project that just couldn't be allowed to fail. But that's where the war really started exacerbating even further. So you had market makers drop out. Some of them were plotted, some of them were dead. There's likely a number of funds, whether that's hedge funds, market makers, market neutral funds, and so forth, that are forever taken out of the game by this situation. Because you have to keep in mind that even if you're not directionally betting on Luna, any of the yield funds, there's countless yield funds that popped up a lot over the last 12 months. And guess where some of the best yield came from? Anchor. And the problem is, if you have a yield fund that is aiming to return, let's call it 15, 17% a year. Well, if you lost 30% on a stablecoin, it's going to be very hard to ever come back over high watermark, not to mention the redemptions they might be potentially facing. Now, directional funds are a little bit more excused from that because, you know, if you manage position sizing well, and for the record, Hartman Capital had zero exposure to UST or Luna going into this. But even for a fund that had exposure, as long as they manage position sizing well, it is a loss, but it is something that's recoverable because in the crypto space, upside for a directional fund is fairly massive, where even major drawdowns can be redeemed. But so what we started seeing is a cataclysm of events where more and more market makers started getting bloodied, funds started getting bloodied, projects and founders. Because I had these tough conversations with some portfolio founders. Some portfolio founders listened day one. They pulled out their money. They got 90 cents worth per dollar. Other portfolio founders were stubborn. And they tried to wait till last minute. But ultimately, everybody was sitting there saying, I need to get my money out. And that's where Luna really lost its place. Where for many days, Luna was still trading in relatively acceptable ranges. For example, went all the way down to $30. But then at some point, after perhaps a 24-hour silence from Doe, he made a tweet thread where he apologized to the Terra community and made a remediation plan. And that remediation plan involved that they pretty much just gonna evaporate the supply limit of Terra. And for reference, Terra, you know, at the time when we exited it, had about 700 million tokens. This morning, one of my employees came into the office and I asked him how many Luna tokens he thought there were. He said maybe like a billion, maybe two. At the time when he came in, it was 27 billion. By the time I sat down here, it was 45 billion. So since we exited, there's roughly close to 100 times as much Luna out there as there was before. And there's about twice as much Luna as there as when I drank my first coffee this morning. This is essentially what you see when hyperinflation happens, right? This is the Luna's experiencing what the German Reichsmark saw. Now, the only difference is that all the inflation is pushed on Luna, the Luna token, while with all the attempt to keep UST somewhere valuable. Now, this is where this conversation is really important because there's many people out there that are probably saying, oh my God, Luna's worth a cent. Let me go buy some Luna. But they don't realize that there's nearly 100 times as much Luna out there, right? And it's inflating at ridiculous rates. So ultimately, you know, and this is where we can slowly, you know, proceed over into the potential implications. Let's start with Luna's future itself. Then we can talk about contagion and, you know, what else can lead to. And finally, regulation. So Luna's future. If the incident started happening, I believe, on Sunday the 8th, going into Monday the 9th. I think it was Monday in the evening that I texted Doe and I said, listen, if you want to salvage Luna, there is the one option I saw at the time still was to kill off UST and to make Luna pure network token. Because even if you strip Luna, the network, off its stablecoin, it's still a very high traction layer one. It has a lot of products, a lot of companies are building on it. And there is a path of a future for Luna without UST. That was option one. Option two was to salvage UST at the cost of Luna. Essentially, at the time, and we within the fund, you know, we started mapping out the contagion, and I made four cases. Case one was death spiral, both assets die. Case two, sacrifice Luna for UST. Case three, sacrifice UST for Luna. Case four, both survive. Doe had a legitimate chance to save both if he had acted fast, swiftly, and as boldly as he's always usually, but within the same day. Instead, he went silent. He disappeared for 24 hours or so, and that cost confidence, and the system started collapsing. So option four was off the table. So now we have to choose between Death Spiral, saving Luna, and saving UST. I thought saving Luna was an option. He chose to do the opposite. He chose to save UST at the cost of Luna. And while it is the more ambitious and proper way to go about it, because the contagion of UST failing is significantly higher than the contagion of Luna failing. We've mapped it out. For Luna, there was perhaps one secondary level effect. UST failing had perhaps 14. And so he wanted to save UST. Now, the problem is, and this is the problem I still see to this day, that I talked with one of our teams that believed that UST could still come back. And they were saying, we'll be back to Peck in 7 days. I'm like, listen, there's $12 billion worth of UST, and there's $2 billion worth of super highly inflated Luna. How on earth is $2 billion going to backstop $12 billion? Right? It works while there's idiots out there bidding, not understanding the inflation mechanism. Luna has been listed on many exchanges, and there's many people out there that just see the numbers down 99%. What if it goes back up 5x, 10x, you know? And like, you know, we'll talk about this in a second. I mean, there's a future here where maybe Luna, 2 years from now, if they keep rebuilding, that they see a comeback, right? But near term, you know, this is not even catching falling knives. This is like catching nuclear bombs. It's just mindless. And so right now, the process is still continuing, although at brutally reduced rates. You know, Luna was trading at $100 sometime this year. It is now, today traded below 1 cent. It traded today below 1 cent while also having, you know, 100 times as many Luna tokens. So now, how will the system end? Luna and UST will keep existing as long as there's people out there buying Luna. Why? Because in order for somebody to get their UST dollars out, they have to burn UST and mint Luna. And then they sit on Luna. And what do they do with it? Well, they got to sell it to somebody in order to cash out. So for the remaining, I believe right now there's 8 billion, I believe it's 8 billion UST tokens at this time of recording. And because it's only worth sub 50 cents, it's about $4 billion worth of UST. So for those $8 billion worth of UST to exit the system, you need to have $8 billion worth of Luna buyers. So in my eyes, in the coming days, and I hope, you know, depending on when this gets uploaded, because it might take a day or two to edit, Luna will likely come to slow grind stop when finally people stop bidding it and bids evaporate and there's zero bids. Because otherwise, the gamblers buying now are virtually the exit liquidity for the people trying to exit $8 billion worth of UST. So that's tricky. So let's take a step back. So that's Luna's future. In my eyes, Luna is toast for the near term. And I take no joy in that. Luna, again, I was a big fan of Luna. I have had really high hopes for where Luna could go as a project. I think there's a lot of really great builders in that ecosystem that I really want to see win. And I also know a lot of people that had exposure to Luna and UST, and I really don't want to see anybody lose money. This is perhaps one of the biggest wealth destructions in modern financial history, period. So, you know, a couple things come from that. First, I hope we really learned the lesson that growth is important, but growth at any cost usually fires back in big ways. I very much believe that if UST hadn't expanded at the same rate it had, if Anchor hadn't offered the crazy yields it had, Luna would still be here today, and the entire crypto market would still be healthier than it is as a result. And does it affect other projects? Directly, I don't believe so. Ultimately, Bitcoin success is completely unrelated to Luna. Ethereum success, completely unrelated to Luna. The show goes on. Decentralization is still the future. That is not going anywhere. But there are some near-term potential contagion that needs to be be aware of. I wouldn't be surprised. And, you know, while I am an emerging manager, I've been navigating the crypto markets for, the crypto markets themselves for over 6 years and been a professional asset manager for over 4 years. And in those short 4 years, I have seen countless crypto firms come and go. I've seen market makers come and go. I've seen hedge funds come and go. I've seen market neutral funds come and go. I've seen venture funds, not make it. And so this is nothing new. Every time we have a bust, for example, in March of 2020, during the COVID crash, one of the biggest funds, Adaptive Capital, blew up, right? In the summer of 2020, after DeFi crash, you had Adamant Capital blow up. There was Neural Capital. There's Tetris Capital. There's no shortage of names that didn't make it. And it almost always was related somehow to leverage. And there's a big lesson there, because ultimately, whether you're an individual or a fund, it's best to keep your hands off leverage or have very, very strict rules on how to deal with leverage, because the crypto markets are such a volatile asset with unbelievable idiosyncratic risks that you need to be aware of in order to navigate them well, that there will be events that can be recoverable spot, but that become existential with leverage. And so I wouldn't be shocked if in the next 30 days, we see a handful of shutdowns, whether that's market makers that try to hold the peg and blew up their entire book in the process, or whether that's hedge funds that were, trying to leg in to Luna on the way down, or try to arbit and do a fancy long short. I mean, listen, even I, people might say, oh, Felix, if you saw it coming, why didn't you short it? Well, I was mentally walking through the process of, how to play a situation like that. And, a directional short in crypto is always very risky, particularly when you look at the relative strength of Luna, right? It was going up in Q1, even when most of the market was being having trouble. So you would be losing money if you had short Luna a little bit too soon. Now, another trade idea I came up with was, what if you short UST and you long Luna, right? Because the logic is that if we're in a bull market, well, UST is not going to go above a dollar, so you're not going to lose money on that short. Short UST, right? Because if it crashes, it could go to zero, but it can't go above a dollar, right? And long Luna, because in a bull market, it can go up, right? And the idea is both will collapse together. See, that idea, when you first you're like, wow, that's smart, perhaps you think that, because you're like, hey, this is like a risk-free trade. But the more I thought about it, I was like, if you think a trade is risk-free, you're not aware of the risk yet. And I started realizing, wait a second, the way Luna is designed, yes, UST would crash, but in the process of it crashing, more and more Luna would be minted, which would sell it down and hold up UST. And that's exactly what ended up happening. Well, you ended up having Luna drop 99% at a time when UST was only down 50%. Ergo, if you used any form of leverage on that long short pair, you blew up on a trade that you thought was risk-free. Ergo, as much as I saw the smoking gun, as much as I talked at a seminar in April, and I said, a person in the audience asked me, what do you see as a potential black swan in crypto? I said, I've got two options. One, Anchor; two, Curve. And I'm not going to go further into them because that's a whole video of itself, 40 minutes. But those were two protocols where I said, like, in a chain of events, they're standing at the end of it, where if something breaks for them, they can unleash hell. And so, with funds shutting down, I think that can put some near-term pressure on the crypto space. If a fund has to unwind their books, there'll be further selling pressure. But that being said, I do believe that we are approaching, a final part to this capitulation, because I think with the death of Luna, we will be out of the woods to a large degree. I believe that's the banner that will be getting ripped off. I think there will be a lot of sorting out happening in the coming weeks and coming months, because, some funds will unwind, but a lot of the damage, I think, has already been done. And there's a lot of fears that have been expressed early via shorts, and there's going to be a lot of short coverings across the market that could send the market coming back quite strong. And it reminds me of, almost all the bad crashes in crypto I've lived through. At the end of 2018, arguably the worst bear market the world's seen, perhaps other than the Great Depression, where nearly every crypto asset dropped 90% plus. We had a final capitulation where Bitcoin crashed from 6,000 under 3,000. And it only hung out there for about 2 months. And then on April 1st, it rose back from the dead. Similarly, we had the COVID crash where, you know, Bitcoin again dropped all the way to $3,000. Ethereum dropped to $80. And within days, it recovered everything. And within days, it recovered perhaps 50% of loss. And within 58 days, it had recovered everything. So crypto is very unique in that the worst times when there's peak capitulation, when there are likely permanent damage, for example, like funds shutting down and so forth, is usually shortly before the recovery. And so I think that near term, we're likely going to see some relief in the crypto markets. Beyond that, and that leads us to the third point, is yet to be seen. I think it's important for anybody operating in the crypto space to set themselves up for success over a longer time period as well, right? So for example, over an 18-month time period, because I wouldn't be surprised if governmental regulators will come in and really nail down stablecoin regulation. Governmental regulators haven't really cared that much about most sectors of the crypto space, but the one sector that they do care about is stablecoins. Why? Because you're really taking away some power from themselves, because people are no longer using US dollars, they're using UST or USDC or USDT. And so naturally, this is the golden case for them. Where before, you know, like, yeah, small, shitty stablecoins fail, that's one thing. But if a $40 billion economic wipeout happens, now they got bullets. So I very much think that government regulators will come after stablecoins, that segment of the pendulum, so to say, is swinging back in favor of the regulators for the near term, which is why I think it's so important for us as an industry to always put our best foot forward, whether you're a founder, an investor, or just a pure advocate in the crypto space, to call out bullshit when there's bullshit, and to also, you know, really urge each other to grow in sustainable ways. We're very big, and if you ever watched the podcast with me and Pomp back in March of 2020, you know, I talked at length about how it's so important to always question where growth comes from. Incentives need to come from somewhere. And it's okay to use short-term incentives to get a system going. And so like Luna was successfully did that for the first few months with Anchor. It got people in the system. The place where it went wrong is where it used incentives as a business model. And that just doesn't work. So moving forward, I think Terra's future is kind of a nail in the coffin. The one way I see Terra resurrect is if Do takes the same energy he had before, sits down, gets the community together, and starts rebuilding. But it will likely take a year or two to rebuild the trust. So I don't think it's a wise trade to just blindly jump in here into Luna, particularly as long as it's hyperinflating. The crypto market as a whole, I very much expect a relief rally in the coming months. I think markets globally have been way down a lot, tech, stocks, crypto, and so forth. A lot of leverage has been wiped out. In fact, now a lot of leverage is on the short side where shorts could get squeezed. While there are funds that are winding down, there are funds that have suffered, I believe that plead will only happen slowly. After that relief rally, what we'll likely start seeing is a flight to quality. There's likely going to be a flight to quality where good builders, good founders, building real products with real revenues, real users that are actually innovating, they will start getting investments. While so many of these systems that were built on incentives, and as we call it in space, Ponzinomics, that shit must go. That can no longer be the future. It helped a lot of projects like come to be, right? So to understand, in the early days, in DeFi summer, things like incentives and Ponzinomics, so to say, were used to bring the systems to life, right? And then they slowly wound them down and it became organic. For example, Uniswap used incentives for a brief amount of time to get a lot of, I think, Bitcoin, ETH, and other types of liquidity, and then it completely shut it off. That's sustainable. What's not sustainable is to say, do we need a business model? Do we need a revenue? Nah, let's just give staking returns. Where do the staking returns come from? Oh, let's just mint some tokens. that's not what this industry stands for. That is not a way where we build value long term. And so what I see happening is that after this relief rally, the shakeout will continue. Those assets, those projects, those founders that aren't adding value, that aren't building real technologies and are just mechanisms for yield, will slowly fade away as investors slowly size out and flee to quality. And those projects that have real products, right, from everything from, you know, decentralized storage, decentralized cloud computing, heck, even on-chain asset management like Enzyme, there's real products with real traction, real users that have a path towards, you know, revenue and profit. To me, that's the future. To me, that's where, you know, crypto shines and can really show traditional industries, whether it's traditional finance, traditional gaming, traditional web infrastructure, that there are better ways. But it's important that these events happen. As much as we look back, as much as everybody will look at their portfolios, no matter what asset class they've invested in, and say, holy moly, the amount of wealth that has been destructed in the last few months is unholy. But at the same time, it is this temporary wealth destruction that I think realigns all values with what is needed in order for the world to keep progressing. Because what these wipeouts lead to is better work ethics, better money management, where teams spend their resources on what matters, less wastefulness, more focus. And to end things on a high note, you know, some of the biggest companies in the world were all founded at the depths of a recession. Uber, 2009, Airbnb, 2008. Spotify was born shortly before the Great Recession, 2006. You have platforms like WhatsApp, 2010. Instagram, I believe, 2009. So there's no shortage of the biggest tech companies in the world that were born at the depths of the recession. And so I very much believe that while this collapse of Luna certainly throws a bad light on crypto, I think we're entering a phase where some of the best early stage venture investments are possible, where you're able to get on the ground floor of the next biggest innovations, because the founders building today in an environment like this, they're not in it for the quick flip. They're not in for a quick money. They see how hard it is going to be, and they're doing it regardless. So if there was ever a time to invest in digital assets and the metaverse, it's probably now more than ever. So taking all that into consideration, Luna was perhaps a major lesson for the crypto space in the world in general at a massive scale. But to put things into perspective, what happened with Luna in UST is literally what will happen with major currencies when there is a run on the bank. And it's important to know because people, you know, the dollar has been inflating tremendously over the past few months. And people think, oh, you know, it's going from 4% to 5%, from 5% to 8%. It's quick, but it's you can deal with it. The place where people are shocked when it comes to hyperinflation is how fast it happens. I remember it was Mother's Day. I was with my mother, and Luna and UST were still fine. Within 48 hours, it had crashed to by 99% in 48 hours. So why do I say this? You know, with all the inflation that's happening, whether it's the dollar or other currencies, currency devaluations can happen. And while everybody right now is fleeing to cash, right? A lot of people are selling their assets, whether it's stocks. I see real estate getting listed again, crypto. You have to ask, what are you selling it for? And the truth is people are selling their valuable assets for cash. What's happening with cash right now? Well, it's inflating a lot, right? And while the Fed is raising rates, you know, you have to also keep in mind, and this is where we'll likely, you know, I might as well make a separate episode about this, but you have to play through the game theory of the Fed as well. In an election year, the amount that interest rates will be raised for the remainder of the year may not be that much. And it's even at some point, you know, if the markets collapse further, where there's actual, you know, economic risk to further drops, there might even be a case for further easing. So in the times of currency devaluation globally, that is going to be very hard to be slowed. I think it's important to stay allocated to assets. And when you allocate to assets, if you can find that rare unicorn asset that has both growth and value, that's the sweet spot. And I think crypto is one of the few sectors that has that, where we are a hyper-growth asset class, but we also have individual assets that have incredible revenues with PE ratios in the 4, 5, 10, 15, 20s. And so with that, that's where I think the right path forward is. And so I want to leave with that. I hope this explanation, this little journey through what happened the last week, and particularly with Luna UST, was helpful. I hope it gives some guidance as to where to next. Listen, nearly every single market in the world is down. Nearly every single investor is down. What really matters is how you recover. What are the next steps? What is the plan ahead? And how are you going to capitalize on the opportunities that are out there right now with so many assets in the gutter that might have a major comeback? So with that, hope you guys have an amazing rest of your weekend. I hope you guys are staying safe. Make sure to tune into these episodes, because we started talking about Anchor and UST already in last week's episode before the crash with Shiliang. And it's really, I think, important that people are safe, that people are protected out there, because crypto, while it is known as Wild West and people think it's such an easy place to lose money, it also is probably the industry that is ripe and filled with so much opportunity than any other industry out there. So that, hope you guys have an amazing rest of your week, and I'll see you next time.